As I said, prior to the brief, we have, in fact, we have switched these agenda points, and we are now doing review of ISA, accounting policy changes and accounting estimates and errors. And we have here Tommaso Fabi, who has helped the ISP producing the paper discussing this issue. Before we do it, let me give the word to Leonardo.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everybody.
We work for the Italian Standard Set, and the staff of the Italian Standard Set is helping with the review of ISA. An important part of this project is the survey that we are doing with preparers. And today, I would like to show you the result of the survey, and I will ask you whether you agree with this result or not. The first question for you is in slide 3 of the presentation. These results are not surprising, in my opinion, because according to our survey, voluntary changes in accounting policies and correction of errors are quite rare, while changes in accounting estimates are common. Do you agree with these results, or do you have any comment on this?
Anyone?
Agreed. The next question is line 4. According to ISA, a change in accounting policy should be applied retrospectively unless it is impracticable to determine the effect of the change. According with our survey, the impracticability exception is rare in practice. Do you agree with this result?
Leonardo, you asked the question too?
Yeah.
Okay. Just to make sure.
We didn't expect really so much comments on the first question, one and two.
We expect some comments on the next slide, that is slide 5.
Okay.
One of the reasons, because we are doing this project, because we think that sometimes it's difficult to distinguish between a change in accounting policy and a change in accounting estimates. According to our survey, this distinction seems quite easy in most cases. You can see that how the 60-80% of the rest of the think that it's easy to distinguish between a change in accounting policy and a change in accounting estimates. We would like to know whether you agree with this result or if you have faced any difficulties in making this distinction between a policy and estimates.
Can I just ask a question? Because it seems that it's quite easy to distinguish between what is a change in accounting policy and what is an accounting estimate. Although I think that IS-8 is not so much clear exactly what we should mean for accounting policy, because it refers also to all accounting practices that may include what is, you know, a measurement basis or accounting meter, the method of valuation or whatever. Can I ask you a more specific question? How many of you think that a change from, for example, FIFO to weighted average or other method for calculation of the cost of inventory is a change in accounting policy or a change in accounting estimate? Because I believe that if we go to this example, we will find really different views.
I think for me it's very simple. A change in accounting estimate results from an event. There is something which has happened, which leads you to change the accounting policies you are following, the accounting estimate you are making, to be more precise. The change in accounting policy, it's a change that you make independently of what has happened in the outside. So, for example, if you change a depreciation policy because basically you've seen that your assets have a longer life than you expected before, maybe because you have got you spend more money on maintenance, and then you consider that and you see that your assets have got a higher life, for me it's a change in accounting estimate. It's not a change in accounting policy. If you just decide one day that your plans, you amortize them over 20 years, and before you amortize them over 15 years, and you had no business reason to do it, then for me it would be a change in accounting policy. That's how I make the difference.
No, you
how to do
it's
it?
It's a
card in the
fair. Just keep changing
it. Yeah, but following this rule, for example, if I change the way I manage tangible assets, and I decide to move from a cost method to a fair value method, because I think that the more representative of the
that policy,
it's policy.
Yes.
But it results from an event.
What no, it's a decision.
What?
It's not an outside event.
Yeah, it may result from an event that changes the way.
It's a decision. It's not an event.
Depreciation is an allocation of the cost as you produce something. Measurement of something, fixed asset, cost or fair value, has got nothing to do with the methodology on which you utilize that asset to produce the underlying product.
Okay.
Therefore, there's a difference there between whether one's a change in estimate or one's a change in methodology of determining the value. But if it's a cost, if it's a process used in your production process, then you're just estimating costs.
But following this route, if I try to, without any kind of events, I move from an estimate of fair value based on an income approach to another kind of approach. This doesn't come from a change from any kind of event, but comes from a decision to measure differently, although always among the fair value category, an item.
Because the objective is always the same.
Yeah. I agree that it is a change in accounting estimate, but I'm not sure that the distinction may come from the existence of an event rather than a free decision.
I'm just looking at my company's accounting policy. For me, so we actually say, you asked about FIFO. We say inventory is valued at acquisition or production cost determined on a first-in to a first-out basis. Now for me, the primary point in this sentence is inventory is valued at acquisition or production cost and not inventory is valued at fair value. Mm-hmm. If we change, and then, I see your point, but for me, first-in, first-out is in some sense a mechanism to get to acquisition costs. It's one of several possible mechanisms, but I don't think the mechanism itself is a fundamental, the fundamental accounting measurement basis that we're getting to is cost.
Thank you.
And I don't think the mechanism to get there and a slight tweak of that mechanism should be considered a fundamental accounting policy change. I hear your point. Obviously, if we've gone from LIFO to FIFO, there'd be a bigger impact, so you might get a pushback there. But moving from FIFO to average cost, just a mechanism to get to cost.
There's a policy change. There's a policy change.
As a policy change in accounting policy.
No, I'd say it's not a policy change. I'd say it's. I know it's a second.
It isn't the best.
So it is sometimes difficult.
I'd say it's not.
when there is a choice in the standards between different methodologies, for example, using fair value or using current value, if we change from one to the other, it is a change in policy. For example, for onerous contract, you should estimate the liability at the lower of two values, value in use or fair value. If it changed from one to the other, it is because one has been lower than the other. It is not a change in a policy, it is a change in estimates.
Okay.
Thank you.
It matters because one's retrospective and the other's prospective. IS8 says when it's difficult to determine, then you must assume it's a change in estimate, therefore prospective. And it's interesting because I think last week the CMAQ said it should be the opposite. You should be forced to do retrospective. But the other, just to show the extreme, you even had an interpretation request when you're measuring your pension liability and you're looking for a high quality corporate bond. If you change and point to a different one, is that a change in policy or a change in estimate? And it's a genuine question that's come to interpretations. So that's where people...
It can only come from somebody like the SEC.
No, it wasn't really the opposite. Actually prepare it.
What is that?
It's just a mechanism to get to the overarching principle.
Yeah.
Just to measure the asset.
So when you say mechanism, you mean that...
That is something near to the policy or something near to the estimates?
So
if you change the mechanism, it's a change in estimate.
Yeah, although there is an option, because in the case you're making, LIFO and average cost are two mechanisms to measure the cost, and an option from the standard, but a move from one to another is not, in his view, is not changing accounting policy. Why is that thing you said that it should be? So this means to me that there's a difference, potential difference in understanding the standard, what is a changing accounting policy and changing accounting estimates. Following what are the accounting rules. So did this confirm that there might be an issue?
Following Alan's example, then you'd say measuring from a level one value to now using level two, I've got another. They're sources of information in order to determine a value, and sources of information can never be a change in policy, it can never be a change in estimate.
It's not here in front of you, but helpfully, I think IFRS 13 tells you that is not a change in policy, but it's a change in estimate.
And that's why I said most of
tells you how to account for it as well.
Yeah. IS16's clear as well. They're just changes in estimates.
You didn't change, in my example, you didn't change your policy. Your policy is to evaluate at fair value. But you estimate the best way to find the fair value. So it is a change in estimate.
It's a change in estimate.
Because it is not a change in the policy is fair value, is a good value. So how I find it, and then it is an estimate.
Yeah, so it's like mountains. The objective is cost. How you get there is an estimation process.
And even if you did move from LIFO to FIFO, that might be significant, then you should say you did disclose that in the year you do it as a significant.
I go from FIFO to LIFO, that's a change in estimate.
FIFO to weighted average, because LIFO's not permitted.
Exactly.
So it's FIFO to weighted average. Because the Americans could use LIFO. We
can't. And I think you have an answer. It's really not easy, and in this situation, it's very difficult to distinguish between the estimate and average. Okay, next.
On slide 6, we have another distinction. The distinction between accounting estimates and correction of prior periods errors. You can see that the majority of the respondents think that this distinction is clear. I would like to know your view on this point.
You don't make mistakes, do you?
But the problem, I think,
certain amounts have been recast to be consistent with current year's presentation. That's all that's essentially.
I think one of the problems here is that ISA defines a correction of error. The fact that entity did not use in the past an information that was available or was reasonably available. So when you change the mechanism or the parameters in the year after because an event, but you are not sure that you may have the information reasonably available that the last year. The issue is the change of the year on the mechanism of the parameters an event of this year or something that existed already in the past, but I wasn't really reasonably available. Or could I make it available last year with some more effort?
Usually when we have a major change, for example, we admit some change in the past because we want to be comparable to our competitors, and we have seen that we were different from the practice in the same industry, and we decide to do as others, I would say, and we account it as a correction of error, and we restate partial statement of prior years. But of course, it is something that has not to be done every year. It is exceptional because you have to keep the more possible the same principle during the year.
Would that really be an error, or should that be a voluntary change of accounting?
Whatever, but
you wouldn't want to admit to an error.
What I say, Fan? I will not say it's an error. I will say I have changed my policy to be comparable with others, as in practice the industry does. So I changed, and the impact is that, and I changed the previous year. I will not write it is an error. What I don't like is when there is an interpretation of the interpretation committee that says, well, reading that standard, you should have taken those glasses instead of the one you have usually. And because you have new glasses, you change your accounting. I don't want to pass a message to the community that I have made an error. Because most of people will think they are completely wrong in that company, they issue false accounting and so on. So that is not a good message. Mm-hmm. Even if you can say, because you change your glasses, you have new glasses, they are better, and you see the stuff are better than you did before. But it's because I changed my glasses. I would like to change it as a new standard, prospectively, and not have to mistake to say, I made an error, because the message is really wrong. I did not make an error when I did it. I thought I had the good lessons at that time.
So we should send classes with a red book, right?
Yeah. to answer specifically to your question, if I know something this year that I did not know last year, and then I didn't take into account this information, for me it cannot be a correction of an error, because it's an event of this year. I close my books the previous year with all the knowledge I had. Then maybe I need to take this year into account the new event. Maybe I will comment on what has happened, maybe the impact on the accounts, but I cannot consider this. The previous year's accounts are wrong, and then I cannot assume that I should correct.
What would happen, though, Jacques, if you had a fraud? We've had somebody for many years report assets in the balance sheet that you now realize are valueless.
That's a different issue.
Would you still say that that's a charge for this year, or would you?
Yes. Yeah, because it's a... Again, it's an event, the fact that I know the fraud this year and its impact on the account, then it's an impact on this year's account. That's how we treat them.
Question for you, Jacques. We've just published IFRS 9, and in IFRS 9 we use a phrase in developing your estimate of your impairment, your allowance for losses for financial assets. We say you have to use all reasonably and supportable information. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go on a major hunting expedition for all this information, but to the extent it is available, and let's say all of your peers are using it, and let's say you only have a one-arm paper hanger in the finance department, and that person is an expert in impairment, and they don't use all reasonable supportable information, would that be an error because they didn't apply the principle correctly?
I think it's a fact and circumstance answer.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I think
because I can give you one that's our real life example for last year.
Okay.
So previously, for all of our mine rehabilitation, we used our mine plans and our building sites and quantity surveyors. And last year, we decided to go to satellite topography. And we found 250 kilometers of roads that weren't on any of our plans and so forth. When we reassessed our rehabilitation and decommissioning liability, it was a change in estimate. The fact that those roads had been established but weren't on the plans, you know, and probably occurred over who knows how many years. It was only the satellite topography that gave us the very few, and that could be what satellite pride is. Absolutely, but we didn't actually think about it.
I hear you, Kevin, but the board went to great lengths, and the issuer preparer community bought into this notion that all reasonable and supportable information is the principle now. It's not an ethereal kind of concept or idea. Now it's baked into the process, and the reason is because there needs to be some rigor behind this whole process of making estimates. So
that cost us a lot of money.
I don't disagree.
So it's not with hope we're going to do every single year or every 5 years.
But I think this is the reason why you're hearing from certain regulators that the process of implementing the change has to be rigorous. Otherwise, you're gonna fall into this kind of situation.
Yeah, but it will never be black and white. In your example, you say, you know, my finance department should have known because everybody else, you know, all the peers knew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is something wrong, you know, by definition, in the way, you know, the books have been closed the previous year.
Right.
Then I would agree that maybe we are facing the correction of an error, but it means also that the auditors have not seen it,
yeah,
you know.
That's
there
right.
We are maybe to one extreme. In Kevin's example, that's far less black and white, because you know what is reasonable work you need to do to see a situation. And I think it will never, you know, certain cases we will be exactly the real errors,
mm-hmm,
you know, because you had all the information and you didn't, or you could have easily the information, you didn't take care of the benefit of that information, or you know, you needed to do something to get it, and it was not available like this, and it's something you should get it to. I would make the difference between something I should do normally in closing my books, and if I've not done it, and then there is a mistake, then it would be an error.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's something which is go beyond, you know, what I normally need to close my books, then I'm not sure I would qualify this as an error again.
Okay. Could we agree that maybe there could be have situations where it's difficult at least to distinguish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good sound.
Because the
borders
would
have especially death, isn't
it?
In slide 7 and slide 8, we describe a possible alternative approach that you are proposing in this research project. I say it is based on the distinction between changes in accounting policy and changes in accounting estimates. We are proposing to remove this distinction, and we are proposing to introduce a new distinction. This distinction is between changes relating to measurement. These changes include changes in measurement basis, changes in method used to make an estimate, and changes in inputs and assumption used. And then we have all the other changes. These changes are changes in the criteria for the recognition of the recognition of assets and liabilities, changes in classification, changes in presentation. The outcome of our proposal is that changes related to measurement should be accounted for prospectively, while all the other changes should be accounted for retrospectively. In slide 9, we report the result of our survey on our proposal. You can see that the majority of the respondents support this new distinction. And we would like to know your view about our proposal, if you like or not.
I think that it's going exactly in the direction that you know, you, you, you
you said before. Exactly in the direction you said before. When we say, when we talk about change in measurement, and we say we distinguish between changing measurement basis from changing results and changing parameters of the estimate. We're just dividing, or better explain what is the change in accounting policy from a change in estimate. For us, changing measurement basis means exactly what you say. It's a major change from a measurement basis as defined by from the conceptual framework, for example, from cost to fair value, so a major change. Changing methods and changing parameters is a change in the way I estimate the measurement basis. That it may be using a LIFO or using a weighted average cost or a method for fair value, an income approach to another method for fair value. It's exactly a change in estimate, so it should be accounted for prospectively, and change in parameters, so it's really clear that, for example, what is the interest rate in discounting the pension, the pension liability, is what is a high quality interest rate, what means AAA, AA, single A. Changing this parameter is seen as another change that should be accounted for prospectively. This goes, I think, exactly in the way you mentioned before.
Well, just one comment on nine. I'm not sure how robust the study was, how many participants there were, but just saw one of the reasons for the yes comment was challenges related to retrospective application. Seems like that response should be taken out. That's a biased response. It's not really answering the question. It's just you don't like retrospective application. I don't know. I'd have to think about it long and hard, but, you know, in one of the definitions using the term estimate, and I heard you use the term estimate a couple of times in describing it, and so changes in methods used to make an estimate, I'm not convinced how much clearer it is if you really sit down and talk about it. I'm not sold, personally.
So I guess the question would be how you define measurement basis, because if you're looking at cost versus fair value, like that's more of a fundamental change versus making a decision around like methods of calculating the value or the assumptions. I completely agree with. I guess it's a question of what you define as measurement basis.
That's the framework.
Yeah, because to me that would be much more fundamental.
Yeah.
Anyway, that at least. Personally, I think the users would want to see at least your disclosed periods shown. But I don't think they need to know, you know, the assumption. By the mere term estimate means that it's not an actual science. If it was P times Q, and P is known and Q is known, if there's an error, it's an error. But if P is a model-based thing that has all these assumptions, and Q is also an estimate and a proxy, then P times Q can actually just be a change in estimate. But I have, and personally, I think if it's a fundamental measurement basis, I'm actually moving from cost basis for properties, and I'm moving to fair value basis of properties. Like that to me is not the same thing. That's not a change in estimate.
This is complete, we'll see in the next slide that this is compliance with the result of the study. Because if you go to slide 11, you can see that the majority of the respondents for a change in the measurement basis, they prefer a retrospective approach.
So it's like a change policy.
While for the, all the other changes related to measurement, you can see, for example, in slide 13 and 14, when there is a change in method, they prefer a prospective approach. When there is a change in the inputs and the assumption used to make an estimate, they prefer a prospective approach. So I think that the result of the survey are quite clear. If you change from cost to fair value, most of the preparers prefer a retrospective approach. But if you change the method to calculate a value or the assumption of the inputs that you are using for determining a value, they prefer a prospective approach.
For example, if you switch from IAS 9 to IFRS 9, and so you recognize for the first time depreciation on a customer without a trigger event, which is asking IFRS 9, not in IAS.
Expected loss model.
Do you consider there is a change in measurement, or is this a change in recognition?
I think that one should be out of scope of this, because this treats the changes, the voluntary changes. The mandatory changes. But it's interesting also to discuss about this point.
Well, in empirically, since 2002, Nadia did the analysis. We haven't had a single retrospective measurement change in our standards. We've changed them, they've all been prospective. So, and most of that's due to hindsight bias. So the fact that our principle seems to be prospective for measurement, not retrospective, because it's always the exception.
Yeah, but this is a voluntary change.
Okay, Hiroshi? I don't support the alternative approach you propose. But I think one reason is that I believe that the current distinction works well. And another reason I have concern is that if you adopt the alternative approach, you need to consider the effect of prospective application. If the measurement changes, the effect will be reflected in a P&L of this current period. Or you may choose the catch-up method. But I think if it's a big change, it should be applied prospectively. So it's exactly very important for when deciding which approach you need to consider the effect of P&L in the current period.
Yeah, that is one point. We need to better investigate in the project, I think, but it's something that we're really struggling on the different possible alternatives. So what we have heard, what to say Leonardo before is that for changing in measurement basis, I think constituents are more inclined to have a retrospective approach. Then we can see whether there might be a catch-up or something else. But for the other changes, the most useful information is a prospective approach.
So I'm just trying to go through and think of examples in your paragraph 8, where you talk about recognition and derecognition. And I can see examples where, as we said earlier in the meeting, you can have an onerous contract because of circumstances today, so you would now recognize it. And in a year's time, the circumstances have changed, so you would de-recognize it. Does that mean you de-recognize it comparatively? I go, no, because again, it still changes in it, because it's the contract that's the event. And you've always recognized the contract. At one point, it was recognized at zero value, and at other times, it was recognized at a negative value, but it's the contract.
I think that on recognition issue, I think that the point is more about the option that may come from the standard. For example, we take leases, so the example of small tickets.
Then I understand.
I think it's more intended in that way. In the case you're mentioning is more like, circumstances has changed, and now I have to de-recognize. So it's a new event, so it's out of the scope, I would say, of this. It's more in a situation in which you say, I have a small ticket option for leases, and I decided to apply, I don't know, it's possible. I decided to apply last year and to disapply this year, that is should
In that case also, we can say it's a change in measurement. In one measure, you have a liability, in the other, the liability is zero.
I think I'm tending to your split, but you need to make a proviso to the retrospective application is that if judgment is required, you cannot go back, this is the hindsight point. So my view is you can never apply retrospective application if there's some judgment required in producing the figures. If they're coming from stock market quotes or whatever, then fine. But I don't personally feel you can ever go back and form a different view about whether the contract last year was onerous or not, or the loss provision. You can never put yourself back in the shoes 3 years. So I think you need a proviso to, that not retrospective, if to come up with the figures you need, you have a large element of judgment. And then the follow-up question is, when I think of the pensions changes, was that, where would that fit, the IAS 19? I mean, here you had two things. You had a sort of net presentation, and you had a different interest rate being applied to the assets. So where would you fit that in your categorization here? Is that top part or the bottom part?
Because one is measurement and one is presentation.
So what would you say?
I think that you probably should just do it, do two effects.
So I can think of even, let's assume you're having a court case where judgment's reserved and your financial statement's now authorised to issue. Now your lawyers are telling you, you've won, hands down. So you've used the best reasonable interpretation. You could just as easily have gone to someone who's totally unbiased, not involved, and asked them, and said, well, I've read this, and it's the foregone conclusion, you've lost. Now you get the answer. Is that retrospective? Because how far do you go to determine when you are applied all reasonable conclusions?
It almost comes back to Patrick's comment earlier about IFRS 9 and forward-looking information. I mean, what's your test? Is it going to be the best financial control framework and the team that sits in financial institutions? Are you going to quarantine it just to your industry? I mean, what's your benchmark around professional judgment when it's been properly exercised in the past versus when it wasn't properly exercised under any reasonable scenario?
Because there's still the cost-benefit analysis. You know, we can get the perfect answer, but it will cost me an absolute fortune. Right? There's got to be the right balance.
In the interest of time, we'll be...
You're fine.
Okay, thank you very much for this.